Hey, this is Sunny speaking. If you are listening to this means you are listening on the iTunes feed. If you're listening on the iTunes feed, you are not up to date on the Subbeacon. If you want to be up to date on the Subbeacon, you got to go to the Patreon at subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us, as Vic likes to say. We have an episode up on the Mitchells versus the Machines, which we published last week, and we've got one coming on Friday about Those Who Wish Me Dead, the new Angelina Jolie fire jumper movie. You want to watch Angelina Jolie fight fires and also assassins? This is the movie for you. I hope you come over there and join us. Like I said, it's as I've said repeatedly, it's as little as $1 a month. So you can find a price tier for your liking. You'll support the show. You'll keep Vic doing it. You'll keep Vic very happy. His bottles of French Cabernet don't pay for themselves. And you keep the show sustainable. So sign up today. It's just again as little as $1 a month, or as much as $100 a month. If that's what you want to throw our way. Look forward to seeing you over there in the comments.
WeWork wanted to become the next Facebook, the next Google.
It became this poster child for this growing trend of flexible offices.
They had already reached a $1 billion valuation.
WeWork was the most overvalued company in the world.
They were willing to spend any amount of money.
When I say they're serving alcohol, they are serving alcohol.
Make some noise!
Everything about WeWork was propaganda.
For God's sakes, they're running desks.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Lass and Sonny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, happy birthday!
Woo!
Thank you, sir. You know, it's funny you say that. I am wearing right now. I'm wearing a piece of merch
straight
from my birthday, straight from the store,
straight from Tee Public.
We're wearing the same thing.
I'm wearing a different color, but yes, we're twinsies. Yeah. We're the same, you and me.
How do you feel?
Well, I feel great, except that I may have to call Wilford Brimley.
What are you saying?
I might have some of the diabetes.
Oh no! What are you saying? Oh, come on! Why?
So the best part of my birthday. Was that my two girls, who have spent a lot of the pandemic baking, and so I hold them, man, honestly, partially responsible for my bloated physical condition. And they baked a birthday cake for me.
Oh.
And they used the My Little Pony dessert cookbook that they found at the library. And as you might imagine, all of these recipes involve some sugar.
Yeah. Yeah.
I assume like bags of sugar. I assume there's like put enter one bag of sugar into the bowl. One pound bag of sugar.
So I had the magic chocolate dream pie, which was what they made for me. It was delicious. And I immediately wanted to call Wilford Brimley about the diabetes starting.
I got the letters, real letters from these people.
They were real letters from people with diabetes. Did they have cakes in the cookbook? Did you look at it? Are they named after the different ponies, like Rainbow Dash, Scootaloo?
There's 100% a rainbow, basically a tie-dyed bundt cake, which is the Rainbow Dash cake.
So it's not in the shape of it. It's not like Carvel where you get,
it's not
shape
like,
of a whale. Whale
yeah,
of a
it's
dad.
Not Fudgy the Whale.
Fudgy the Whale.
But it was great.
That's
girls
great.
My girls are the best.
That's right. Did you eat the whole cake or did you?
No, we all shared it. I did a little bit of math. They'd used an Oreo crust, which they made from scratch. They made the whole thing from scratch. Oh. And they used an entire box of Oreos. And I did the math. So we cut the pie into five pieces.
You got to crush it.
There are 30 Oreos in a box. That means that each piece, just to start, is five Oreos.
Oh.
That's just the crust.
That's considerable. That's considerable.
Diabetes!
You know what's funny? You should say that, JVL, because the other night, I this has only happened once or twice, so I don't want to alarm our listeners because I do insist I still have Wolverine blood. But, you know, the Wolverine blood, it's only, like, much like kryptonite, its only weakness is diet. Everything else I'm impervious to. But I had the weird sensation of hot feet. You ever have a, like, oh my, you know, some people say, oh, my feet are, my feet are chill. My free, they're freezing. You know, my feet are cold. I was in bed under the covers and they just felt hot. And I said to Kate, do my feet feel hot too? She goes, yes, they feel very hot. So I did the worst thing possible, which is look it up on the internet.
Well, you've got foot cancer now.
Yeah, it's a foot cancer. I don't know if you know that. For symptom of foot cancer, hot feet.
Your feet are are riddled with cancerous cells. They're going to have to come off.
You know, it could be any number of things. It could be running related or whatnot. But one of the things they said is it could be early onset diabetes, you know, type 2 type. But why would that apply to me, really?
Yeah.
And why would it be? And the second thing is, I don't know how you pronounce this, JVL. You're a doctor of sorts. Is it neuropathy or neuropathy?
Neuropathy.
Neuropathy. And it's like, oh, nerve damage. And I said, well, what causes nerve damage? And they said one of the causes of nerve damage is, in according to like Mayo Clinic or whatever the site, I put this in quotes, alcohol misuse. What does that mean?
You know what that means? That means going out to a party and not drinking enough so that you're not fun.
Exactly.
That's you get misuse. There and the people who are there, they look at you and they say, this Thank guy you. Isn't really making the party more fun. He is misusing his alcohol by not drinking enough.
Alcohol misuse to me is when you go and you have one beer, because one beer doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
You're doing is gaining weight.
All you're doing is consuming calories that you could have gotten from Oreo cookies. That's in the crust of a
that's
pot.
That's right. I was going to say alcohol misuse is like, oh, I'm trying to get the stain off. Let me use the alcohol.
So I want to throw one other thing out, which is that another one of the gifts I got was from my sister. She got me something which I did not even know exists, which is the Lego Batman 1989 Batwing Homewrecker Edition. And when completed, this from the Tim Burton Batman movie will be 20 inches across and is so robust that you can mount it on your wall like it's a damn television. You could, in theory, get some glow-in-the-dark paint and paint a moon around it so that at night you have the Batwing silhouetted against it. I mean, that's something you could do. That's one option.
How many pieces is this?
I don't know. 2,500 pieces. Who could say?
Is it an actual Lego or is it a Leppin?
No, it's the actual. My sister only does the best for me.
JVL, you know the Batmobile you had in your office?
Oh, yeah.
Is that also 1989 Batman?
You know, funnily enough, they have, I discovered after getting this and doing some research into it, there is now also a Batman 1989 Homewrecker Edition of the Batmobile, but it is very similar to the one I had, which I got 20 years ago.
Yes.
20 years, 15 years ago. Anyway, all of this is, I was talking about those movies with my wife, and I said to her, do you think the kids would really like the Tim Burton Batman movies?
I've thought about this.
Is that an all-ages kind of thing? And then I realized that for G-Money, who loves superhero stuff and is only 4 years old,
yeah,
Batman and Robin would probably be his Citizen Kane.
Oh, yeah. You bet with Chris O'Donnell, Batman
the
and Robin?
The Chris O'Donnell with the Bane and the George Clooney.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and Mr. Freeze?
The ice skates. Mr. Freeze. Poison Ivy. I think the G-Money would watch that thing and just the entire time be like,
aah! Yeah, yeah. Amazing. Amazing.
And so I kind of want to do that just to watch him watch it. Do we think that is the kind of movie that is so perfectly bad that it is pitched exactly for today's 4-year-olds? Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd watch it, so, you know. No, I mean, you know, my answer is going to be, watch. Yeah,
we see Silverstone. But I mean, you know, he's a little young for getting excited when Joel Schumacher zooms in on her ass when she gets onto the bus.
She was already post Clueless in that, wasn't she?
Way too old for you.
And that one also has that one also has Uma Thurman, right? As Poison Ivy.
Uma Thurman is Poison Ivy,
and a really sad Bane.
A Bane with no lines. Oh. Bane only grunts as if he's an animal.
No, I mean, you know what it reminded me of? It was like a knockoff of Juggernaut, I thought. You know, and he's just running into things. And again, especially now in retrospect, of course, because there is the real Bane, who we all know and love.
Yeah.
It just pales.
I don't know if you remember this, but you and I saw that movie together, Victor. And I complained to you, Batman and Robin.
We did?
As we were leaving the Avalon, which is where we saw that.
Oh, you mean up in Connecticut Avenue, Avalon, yes. That theater? Wow.
I complained to you about Bane, and I said, how could they take Bane, the noblest and greatest of the Batman? He's the one who broke Batman's back! And I think you said something like, I gotta go. We're doing something. And you just couldn't get out of there fast enough. You're like, I have Algonquin round table /
Bane?
Orgy at the Kennedy Warren. you go back to Arlington comic book guy.
That was, I forgot that. You know, the movie that always stands out, well, we watched many movies together, obviously, but one of the ones that always stands out was Men in Black, because I almost had an accident on that one.
Oh, I remember that. When we saw that at the Arlington Courthouse, and when that was over, you were like, I gotta go.
I mean,
and
it
you
was
got
like
up and
a,
you ran.
I thought I might not make it. You know, cold sweats, and it was happening during the tunnel scene where the car goes upside down, and I thought, this is it. This is gonna be an accident somehow in this movie, and it might not be the car. All right.
It was amazing. And boys, so anyway, it was great.
Lovely.
It was great.
Wait,
boys,
Vic,
how are
question,
you?
Question. Yes, Vic, Sonny. Vic, did you go all the way home?
No. I went to JBL's apartment and destroyed.
I thought you destroyed the AMC bathroom.
No, okay.
No. Did you do that and then destroy
it? No. I saved it all for you, but you kindly slipped a match.
Oh, that's right. Matches. That's right. I slipped matches. And I was like,
believe me, that was a two-match special. That was that was unholy.
Can I do one? Two please, other things.
Please, it's your birthday. It's your birthday. You can go as long as you want.
Shout out.
Wait,
Charlie.
I have one more question. I have one more question.
Yes.
How far did you live from the theater, JVL?
A 4-minute walk.
So
and
you
we
were,
drove.
So you
we
were
drove,
okay.
Drove,
so you were in like Roslyn.
Then. No. I was
or the other way. The courthouse.
I was four blocks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Four blocks away, and we drove. So it was a hot 240 seconds.
Every now
seconds.
And then I'll pass that complex by on 50. It's huge.
It's very large.
It's very large.
Very large. So two other things I would like to do, just early shout-outs in the
show
to my boys at the SSEU show who did a special episode of their show just for me.
Wow.
Where they wrote a poem, 'Twas the Night Before JBL's Birthday. And another special shout out to all of my friends at the Bulwark, including you, Sonny Bunch, for sending me a cameo.
Oh, I saw it.
Did you hear about this?
Oh, I saw it.
It is the caterer from the Fyre Festival.
That's fantastic.
Who had been sent to the customs to take one for the team in order to get the water released. And he told me that he heard that I was really good at taking one for the team. Fantastic.
That was fantastic.
That was all Jim Swift. That was a Jim Swift special.
He sent me the thing, Jim Swift. And it was also very clear, the quality of it. It was very sharp. Yeah. And I mean, I do love that I had a Tara Reid cameo by our friends.
Our friends?
Good friends of ours sent me specifically a Tara Reid one. But yours was more sober.
So I have a question about cameos. So I have now been party to four different cameos. I have had two sent to me, one by Hacksaw Jim Duggan, one by this gentleman, Alan King. There's your Tara Reid cameo, and then I sent a cameo to a friend of mine, one of my priest friends, from Coach, from WWE, John Coachman. Every single one of these cameos has been absolute gold.
Yeah.
Is that just the norm? Are all of these things awesome, or do some is the that I have just gotten lucky?
Break
and
it
that
down.
90% of them are just dross. And
well,
it's
it depends.
Like, you know, someone smoking a cigarette. Yeah, hey, Jimmy. People say they love you. Thanks for $500.
That was kind of
mine,
and it was hot. But I was going to say gold in which sense, though? Quality of the video, or
quality.
The script, or the delivery of the script.
The delivery, but also just the people doing it. Mm-hmm. Seem totally into it.
Yeah,
I
would
say they're actually having fun.
I would do that.
With
I should get. We should get on Cameo.
So I so Beth ordered a cameo for one of her friends when she got pregnant, like a congratulations, you're pregnant, and she got one of the girls from the the OC to do it. I forget Heidi. It was Heidi Montag.
Not
Heidi
Montag. Oh,
Spencer and Heidi.
Yeah, no, not different. Not the TV show, the OC, the reality show, the OC.
Oh, the OC. Sorry.
Right. So, and she was like super into it. She was like, I'm so excited, you're pregnant. Ah! And it was like really nice and very good. So my understanding is that all of these are perfect. Every cameo that's ever been done is perfect with high energy all around. Everybody should do that.
I have all sorts of questions. One is, is there some sort of a rating thing? Do you get to rate the cameo? Because I wonder how it drives performance and the number of people who want to go to you versus others because they heard somewhere that person was really good. And the second thing is, what's the take? You know, what percentage goes to cameo? What percentage goes to?
I don't know, but you know, for most of these people, I mean, look, it's great money for 3 minutes of your time.
Right.
And it means a lot.
It's not rich money. Like, nobody's getting rich off of the cameo stuff they're doing.
Well, there's
like,
the guy from
Rick
The Office.
Flair is.
Well, there's the guy from The Office. There was a story about that. He made, like, Kevin, I think, from The Office.
Oh, you're kidding. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kevin.
Made like $1 million last year doing cameos.
No, really?
Oh,
good for him.
Okay, well, maybe you can.
I mean, but I think that's, I do not think that's the norm. I do not think that's
But he probably charges a real premium.
Yeah.
But it would still be worth it if he delivered it in Kevin voice. And I was just watching The Office, I told Sonny. That would be fantastic.
So anyway, cameo, great. My understanding is they're all perfect, and there's never been a bad cameo done. And thank you to everybody. So that's all.
Yay.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Sonny, what's going on?
Would you say that cameo, should we come back to this, but I want to put a pin in this to talk about later. Should cameo be valued more highly than WeWork? And that sort of thing. We'll come back to this. Let me
throw this out there right now, just as a sidebar. The most criminally undervalued tech company in the world is OnlyFans.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
That thing.
What is it valued at?
I saw something about this like a month ago. It's really low for a, you know, I think it's like, you know, 3x price versus earnings or something like
that. Well, nobody wants to buy stock in a pornography company.
Can I tell you
why?
Can I tell you
why
the difference?
Is that? Everybody buys stock in weed.
The difference is WeWork elevates your consciousness, and OnlyFans elevates something else. Oh,
elevates your head.
Oh, again, Sonny.
All right, that's all right.
What else do you got,
Sonny? What's up?
Come
buddy?
On.
Speaking of OnlyFans,
did you have technical news for us, Sonny? About no. You didn't have any news about the episodes. Did you want to talk to?
I just wanted to. Thank you for reminding me. Just as a heads up to folks who are listening on the Patreon, if you enjoy the show and you've wanted to tell people to get into it, we are going to start putting new episodes back on the like iTunes feed. So they'll be a couple weeks old.
Yeah, don't worry. It'll be old episodes.
It'll be old episodes.
You get
but
the
basically,
new stuff. If you're listening to this now, it's new.
Yeah. Basically, we're just, you know, look, we don't want the Subbeacon to be a closed ecosystem. We want to be able to grow the show and bring people in, et cetera, et cetera. And it's very hard to grow a show that's entirely that's behind right. the paywall. So we're gonna be putting up again. I think it's gonna be episodes that are 2 weeks old. So we just posted the one that was, I can't even remember which one, the kid detective.
Oh, yeah.
We posted that one on the iTunes feed this week, and it'll
tell
be
your friends.
So, you know, if you have people who want to get, if you're like, I love this show, it's the only thing on Patreon I subscribe to, you should listen to it, send them the old Apple feed, and they'll be able to get a sense of it. So,
wonderful.
Yeah, that's that. Thank you for reminding me.
Yes.
You know, I had forgotten.
And in
about
other
that
news,
entirely.
you were reading something today, Sonny.
Showering. Speaking of OnlyFans, I'm in the shower right now as we talk. I'm live streaming this to my OnlyFans. There was a story in the New York Times about showering and bathing habits during the pandemic, and I'm very curious how you guys have fared in this regard, because for a while, I'm reading this New York Times story. And it's like, you know, I think the numbers are like 16% of people have, you know, are showering once a week or less or something like that, you know, at this point, instead of the normal, which is showering at least once a day. Come on, don't be a savage. But during the pandemic, for like a solid like 4 or 5 month stretch, there was a period where I was showering maybe 2 times a week. Like, ooh. I was showering like twice a week tops, because I wasn't going to the gym. I wasn't going to see anyone. I wasn't like going out and doing anything. I was just at home all the time working on my laptop on the couch. And then going and then picking my kids up from school and going to bed. I mean, like, I just was like, I was deeply lazy, and part of that laziness was not taking a shower. Now, thankfully, because the gym is back open, I'm like going to the gym every day. I come home, take a shower. It's like I've got a whole routine now. I've got a whole routine. But this is the problem with the pandemic. Like, the big problem with the pandemic is that it broke so many routines that it like radically altered the way that I just lived my life. And one of the ways that it did that was by like I just stopped being a clean person. I was less clean all the time. And I was curious if that happened to you guys at all.
JVL,
or if you,
why don't you go first?
You stayed clean.
I will preface this by saying that I have very particular needs when it comes to showering. For instance, when I was an undergraduate, and I would...
I hope you enjoy that sound effect.
So when I was an undergraduate, and we had practice for the crew team at 4:30 a.m. or something ungodly, I would shower before practice. Then I would go to practice and get sweaty and gross, and then come back and shower again before going to class. Because I just, the idea of like starting the day not showered, which is how a civilized person begins one's day.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, in my perfect world where everything is going the way it should be, I would shower 3, maybe 4 times a day.
Okay. Just so you're going in the other direction.
Like,
I wasn't
washing
sure
your hands.
Which way you were going to go.
So
there.
Like,
wow.
Like,
okay.
Except that during the pandemic, exactly like Sunny.
Mm. It's crazy.
I dropped down to once every 3 days.
Once every four days.
Because I don't think I'm going anywhere. I was like the exact same thing.
You notice.
Drive a kid to practice.
It's like,
come home and work.
What am I doing? What
drive
am I doing
a kid
in my
to
life?
School, come home. Mm-hmm. Just like, why? And I would think to myself, why would I spend the time? Like, that's time that I could be spending working.
See, it wasn't even the time factor for me. It was literally just like, why even bother? Why bother?
If you don't feel
what do
dirty,
I have to live for?
I mean, this is the thing. If I was like outside, you know, playing with the kids and get sweaty or whatever, all right, that's one thing. But I'm just like sitting at home, just sitting there watching TV, writing, recording podcasts. Not like I'm doing anything physical.
I would say my general routine is showering every other day. And I think that's mostly held up. During the summer, obviously, if you
wait, that's your general routine.
That's my general
even in
routine.
Non-pandemic.
You shower just on a regular basis. You go you
every
like
other
skip...
day. I'll skip a day. Yeah, sure. But if I'm sweating, all right, make me look like the European over here. But if I'm sweating, I'll shower every day. In the summer,
I'll just throw some cologne on it.
In the summer,
I'll do the Italian
shower.
They call
me, they call me Mr. Dracana.
In the summer, I'll shower every day. But you know,
you put on a little Dracar, they don't even
noir.
Notice.
You need the Dracar noir. But you know, and I remember in Rome, where, you know, we were walking around, sweating bullets. That was, it was one day I showered 3 times in one day. It was insane, but it was like really sweaty. But during the pandemic,
have to die before we can nominate her for sainthood?
Yeah, I don't
could
think,
we start
I,
the beatification
just,
process
just,
now
but,
while
you know,
she's alive?
Do keep in mind, I am Asian. You know, we don't really stink or sweat. You know, we just don't smell. But
you're a clean people? Is that
what
you're saying?
We're a very clean people. But even during the pandemic, I don't think I've gone to the stretches that they're talking about in the New York Times, maybe 2 days. But you'll notice that, I mean, you know, what do they tell you anyway? If you go that long, you know, wash the hairy bits, you know, the hairy parts, you know, I mean, at the very least, you know, do that. These people who are doing once a week, I mean, that's what separates us from Europe. You know, I mean, and you can tell that when you're like going in an elevator with tourists, you know, somewhere, you'll notice. Yeah,
can we have a brief extension of a conversation I was having on the Bulwark?
Yeah.
About high school showers.
Okay. No, I never showered. I never showered.
I don't
showered.
Want to talk about this.
You don't want to talk about it? Okay.
Was right. something happened? Thing that happened to you?
Sonny went to a high school called Oz.
My friend Sarah Longwell was telling me, as if it was the most normal thing in the world, that yeah, you know, in middle school, they had a gym teacher who came in and like stood there and watched all of the girls showering together to make sure they showered.
Is a gym teacher a guy or a girl?
In middle school?
Yeah, starting in middle school. In middle school gym. And she's just like, because that's what happens. It's weird. I didn't like it. And I was like, that is not what happens.
That's not what happens at all.
No.
That is what happens in either prison or when you have a pervert as your gym teacher.
It's what happens in Sucker Punch. In my high school, you could theoretically take a shower after gym, but nobody did that. Nobody did that. I mean, the only, like, I literally cannot remember a single time anybody showered after gym.
Did you ever see the group showers at your high school used?
Yeah.
Because I went for 4 years. I never once saw that. And those things, like, the grout looked like it had basically dried out and turned to sand because there had not been liquid on that tile in 60 years.
Our high school, as far as I know, the football team, they all had to shower.
For hazing?
Initiation? It was a jail style. It was like a jail style shower, as you know. You know, it's like out in the open. It's not
like
private stalls. It's not private stalls.
And you went to Holmdel.
It's like
high
American
school,
History
correct?
X.
Was it Holmdel or Wall? Which one
was it?
Holmdel. Okay.
It was Holmdel with the Naked Twister.
Naked Twister. And
naked
in fact,
Twister.
There was a football game.
I have no
idea
what you're talking about. I don't.
There is a high school in Central Jersey that during Vic's and my time was a big deal in local news because the parents had caught the high school varsity team hazing freshmen by forcing them to play Naked Twister.
You know,
which is a totally normal thing.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there, by the way, so to speak. But I remember it was a big deal because the Monsignor Donovan football team was going to, they were hosting the Holmdel football team for a game on a Friday night. And there was going to be, you know, they were just telling us don't start anything. But one of my classmates did get down to the because it's like the track that surrounds the football field.
Yeah?
And he got down on the track and he was wearing like a cape that was, it looked like a cape, but it was a twister, like the twister mat. And it was a lot, very controversial. Keith Arnott. That's who did it. It was very controversial. God, I thought it was funny.
So you guys had to do showers.
Funny.
The showers is
I never showered in high school. I mean, in the shower.
I would be interested to know what the Sub Beacon listeners have on this, because when we talked about this on the show with Sarah and I, we got so much email, and there seems to have been several chronological dividing lines in this, because the people who were over the age of 60 said, oh yeah, not only did they shower, but my high school had a swimming pool and we all had to do swimming lessons and pass certain swimming certifications. They just made us do it naked. And I heard this from at least five different people. And again, I just thought to myself, what is happening out in America?
I always imagine, you know, like my wife, Kate, you know, she went to high school in Connecticut and
the cheerleaders all showered together.
Together. And it was the same room. You know, I mean, it was like no stalls there. It was all giant. And she went to school with Gretchen Mol.
Yeah.
So as you can imagine, I had questions for her.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I assume they had shower buddies to get them in and out of the showers
faster to help wash
each other. Right. Because four hands are better than two.
Get in there. Okay, thank you for that. JVL, I thought you were going to give us a Peloton update or something.
Still not here.
It still hasn't arrived. Did you see?
Still not here.
You didn't. You got the bike, not the treadmill.
The treadmill has been killing people.
Yes. Yes.
Killed one person.
The Peloton treadmill is essentially like the Saturday Night Live mirror, right? Have you seen this? Unimportant. One of the other Peloton clones is something called the Mirror, which is a giant portrait size, like 65-inch flat screen television with camera in it, and you stand in front of it and work out. And it kills people as well. It sucks you.
This is
a Black Mirror style thing, right? You're working out in front of the screen until one day you are sucked into it, into the alternate dimension. You can't get out.
No, right? I mean,
and that's what all the instructors are. They're people who have been captured and sent into this phantom zone.
The phantom zone, very good, along with General Zod.
I'm sorry. I don't understand what's actually what this TV setup is that you're describing. What is?
Oh, I've seen that.
It's like a yoga thing where they're doing yoga. And you're like,
but you know,
so it's not a mirror. It's a screen.
Yes.
And the screen, you know, has a camera built into it, and so it shows you yourself back, but it also has, you know, is projecting the trainer for your group. Just picture Peloton, but with like calisthenic-y stuff. Mm-hmm. But it is, you're standing in front of it, and it's just like they're talking to you, and they're life size because it's a 65-inch screen. And
that's literally Orwellian. That's from Big Brother.
Yes,
that's the screen.
Right. Where they tell you to work out. Yes. They're telling Winston to do his. No, you're not stretching.
Yes,
touch your toes.
Yes, that's, you just read that book.
I did. It's so fresh in my mind, man.
And the version you get at Costco is just an actual mirror.
Believe me,
I'm sorry.
But you know, the also do an app, because my wife's cousin's wife, if that makes any sense, she has the Peloton app, which I believe is $12 a month, and so it's a running app for when you go jogging or running outside. Mm-hmm. But so they have these, you know, attractive trainers doing this, but of course you're not looking at them because otherwise you're going to get hit by a car. So I guess you just play it. I ask you, and you just listen to them coaching you along as you're running. How do we even know they're running?
For anybody who is into this sort of thing, the Nike Run Club app is, I think, the best of all of these. It's really good. Do you use it, Victorina?
I do not. I don't have anything in my ears when I run.
Really?
Okay. No.
You don't listen to you? You just are with your thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Clears
my head.
Like a...
It's meditative.
Can we get a recording of that monologue? I would just love to
you know
hear
what the weirdest thing is?
The interior monologue of Victorina
Mattis. I wave to people all the time. You know, I look around. Yeah. I wave to people when
I like
I'm
look at her.
I don't know. I wave to people all the time, you know, especially other runners. We give each other the wave and stuff. The only people who I say are the rudest people when you wave and they don't wave back are like the high school girls. I don't know why. It might be because I got this thing poking out of my shorts. My phone! I'm talking about my phone! I was going to make a joke about you joining Peloton Nation, being part of a cult. And speaking of cults, that was my transition. Anyway,
I'm sorry.
That's
I ruined
okay.
your time.
We went down this path. That's okay. 30 minutes later. We're talking this week about the Hulu documentary, WeWork. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
So the WeWork documentary on Hulu is a little bit like the Fyre Festival documentaries that were on Hulu and Netflix, and in the sense that they are, this is a story of hubris and absurdity, massive wealth all rolled into one in like the worst, most possible way. So it's basically the story of this guy, Adam Neumann, who, convinces people that he has created this brand new tech company that is going to revolutionize how people work. You know, it's not just people are going to work here, but they're also going to live here, and we're going to have them set up in workspaces so we can monitor who is working best where. And these people who are working on all these different projects are going to work together. It's the We Revolution, you know, the We Revolution. In the course of promoting this ridiculous company, it gets valued up to $46 billion or something, $47 billion. And then it all comes crashing down. Now, we all know the story of WeWork, and we're all kind of familiar with it. I speaking strictly from the perspective of like the art of this documentary, I was a little bit underwhelmed by it. Because I was occasionally kind of confused about who exactly the movie was talking about. And this is like, this is just a me not paying enough attention problem. But there's a moment kind of early on, maybe 10, 15 minutes into it, where they're talking about they're talking about all these people who are working in the WeWork offices. And then these people are all going to this big camp event. It's a big, you know, it's a big party. And I was like, wait, the people who are renting the space are like the customers are going to this WeWork, and that's what is. And so it, like, there's this just very basic problem with the documentary where they don't do a good job of delineating like
tenants,
who it's actually about, like tenants versus employees, and what everybody is getting out of this. Maybe this is just a me problem. Maybe this is me not paying enough attention. So for the first like 10 or 20 minutes of the show, I'm watching it. I'm like, wait, are they talking about the workers or like the people who are working within the WeWork, like in renting the space and stuff? And eventually I realized, okay, this is almost entirely from the perspective of the employees. This is almost entirely from their perspective. But again, the documentary does weird things that kind of conflates the two. Like the guy who lived in one of the WeWork pods, right? Like he is not an employee of WeWork.
Correct.
And yet he is one of the voices in this. So again, it's a weirdly confusing documentary in very basic ways. Now that said, it's such a compelling story with such ridiculous people that it is hard not to find it kind of entrancing. And the big star, the breakout star of this, I assume, is the wife of Adam Neumann, the crazy, the crazy woman who is related to Gwyneth Paltrow somehow.
Cousin.
And wants to be this kind of influencer, you know, style individual. But yeah, the documentary itself is very weird and uneven just from a filmmaking perspective. The subject matter manages to overcome all of that. It's really interesting and fascinating. And like the weird thing is, and this is more JVL's area and topic of expertise, so I will kick this to him. But the weird thing about this is that, look, it seems like there is a billion-dollar company in here, maybe a $1 billion company where you have somebody who's really good at he partners with Jamie Dimon or somebody, and he's really good at finding spaces to convert. He's really good at turning it into a thing that people want to do, because what they have done, what they did at WeWork was create basically a post-college experience for people who were done with school, right? You go there and you hang out and you spend all day working in the common area, and then you go and you drink and you fall asleep for a few hours and you get up and you do it again. And if you don't have kids, if you don't have a wife, if you don't have a girlfriend, if you don't have a big cluster of friends in this place that you've moved to, this is actually a perfect transition out of college into a real world. And like I think there's a valuable company in that. There's a valuable idea in that. But, you know, maybe it's $1 billion company, maybe it's $500 million company, maybe it's, you know, whatever, but it's not a $47 billion company. And all of these people want to be $47 billion companies. They all want to be the Facebooks or the Instagrams or whatever. And the hubris of it all, the greed of it all, is the thing that is most striking and you know, kind of nuts. So I don't know. I kick it to you, JBL. You are the WeWork.
We'll talk about the business of this in a minute. Victorino?
Yeah.
What did you think? Did this movie make you angry or bored? Were you interested? Were the emotions going through your head?
Well, you know, it gets a documentary quadrant score of B-.
Score a documentary. Yeah,
that's why it's
a
document. That's why I say it's a documentary quadrant. Yeah. Depending on the certain things, I will give an NA to, because if it's not that kind of a thing, then you don't expect it. But there are other things that there's potential.
The making of Caligula. A+.
Then you better have to. You better deliver on these things. So number one, the plot's like a B+. I get it. I don't understand a lot of it. I still to this day do not know what amortization is, and I look it up. I look it up all the time, and I look at it in English, and I have no idea what they're talking about. In English, I have no idea what they're talking about. Okay. Duration, however, is an A. It was under 2 hours. Okay, so violence, action, obviously an NA. Sex, nudity.
No. Hold on. Let me stop it right there. The violence is an F-.
Because there could have been violence?
Because what this movie needed
was
an enormous amount of violence.
Like killing all these people?
Just beating all these people,
deserves to be beaten to a pulp. Sure. And the fact that they were not, I think, is a huge mark against the movie.
Well, I mean, if you want to look at it that way. And I would say sex nudity, I did give it a rating for that. That was not an A. That was an F. Because if you're telling me that there wasn't like a giant orgy at the summer camp or at the We Live building, what's the whole point of living there?
Yeah.
Come on. Don't tell me that didn't happen.
They really allied that, don't they?
Yeah, they do. So I thought it was interesting and fascinating, but it does come down, for me, it came down to the fact that the guy is a con. But it is amazing how many people, it amazes me how many people fall for that sort of new age bullshit. You know, like, oh my gosh, it's so amazing, the elevation of the consciousness and blah, blah, blah.
We are going to elevate human consciousness and unlock your superpowers.
Well, and the interesting thing is that there's The only real con, like the only real like con artist aspect of it, really comes in at the end when he's doing all of the weird tech stuff that he's clearly like made up,
yeah,
and that like nobody has any idea what he's talking about, and it's a bunch of nonsense, you know, like the him being a charismatic person, whatever. That's, you know, that doesn't strike me as a con exactly. It just strikes me as a charismatic person.
But the
buildings were what they were. They were just, like the guy says, you know, they're just renting fucking desks.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's all they're doing. And they're doing it well and smart, and they have free beer, right? That's like the big draw.
No. See, we are not a real estate company. We are the world's first human social network.
Yeah.
Love it.
This fucking guy.
It's really me. And you know what else? I mean, people talk about how charismatic. He and his wife, they look like aliens. I'm not afraid to say that. They look like very tall aliens. She in particular. And I found her frightening. And it made total sense for her that interview clip with Gwyneth Paltrow. That made total sense to me. And then her discussing We Grow, which was going to be their version of daycare.
The kids at school.
Their kindergarten, yeah.
I mean, come on now. So it was for me, interesting that it was able to get to that point, but people do jump on it. Everybody wants to be the next. Everyone's looking for the next Google. So that part did not surprise me, but wow. And parts of it, as you know, I love a good party. I love being social, but I do hate forced socialization, if you will. And this is like forcing people to become, you know, let's force you to all get along together and be friends. Let's force you to go to this camp. And again, I don't like mud and stuff. And that's what they meant a reference to. And count me out, except for you have bracelets. So, you know, they're going to make sure you're listening to their version
tracking,
of a TED Talk.
Literally tracking your employees to make sure they go to the... That's wild.
Yeah, that is wild.
Yeah.
That is wild. JVL.
So qua documentary, and it's always a little dangerous to go into a documentary knowing a lot about the subject. And I've written a bunch about WeWork, so I know not a lot about it, but a fair amount. And so I was disappointed in that the structure of the documentary is meant to focus on the cult-like aspects of the company, rather than focusing on the fraudulent aspects of the company. Because to me, that's the much more interesting story. And maybe it's not to most normal viewers. Maybe to normal viewers, what is interesting is this guy who sounds like Tony Robbins with a brain injury. You know, like,
yes.
Who I gotta say is, you know, I had heard him a ton prior to WeWork blowing up. And I think I've said this on the shows when we talked about this stuff, you know, years ago. I think the idea of co-working spaces is the future, because eventually companies are going to realize they can make their employees pay for their own desks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you, Mr. Big Corporation, except at the very largest level where you have your own campus, anybody below like 500 employees is going to realize, hold on a minute, I don't need to pay for IT. I don't need to pay for an office. I can make my employees literally pay for their own desk. But that is not a giant business. It's like a real estate business. You're subdividing real estate. You start slicing those things. The margins are reasonably low. And listening to Adam Neumann talk, even when he was, I just thought to myself, this guy doesn't sound like a leader. Nothing coming out of his mouth sounds charismatic. Again, he sounds either
exotic.
Crazy, or like he doesn't know a fucking thing in the world. Like it's all, every fourth word out of his mouth is bullshit.
Yes.
And this is not the case when you, like, when you listen to Jeff Bezos talk. Jeff Bezos does not sound like somebody who has no idea what he's talking about. You listen to Peter Thiel talk. Peter Thiel, you know, they may be wrong. They may have a, but these are guys who have deeply thought about what it is they're doing. And the way people signed on to this thing, yeah. I don't know. And so maybe there is a cult. Like his secretary was one of the characters who I was interested in but hated because she's this 23-year-old girl who gets off a bus in Grand Central Station and just, you know, is crashing with, you know, goes to work as an executive assistant at a hedge fund. And then someone says, my boss is this guy, Adam Neumann at WeWork, and you got to come be his secretary because it's going to be me. And this girl, just, you know, she's crying about how we were going to change the world. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, you're a 23-year-old executive assistant. You thought you were changing the world?
Yes, but I think like, they all think that now. I think they all. I don't think it's just her. It's everybody that was, you know, everybody that was crowded into that little, their big annual summer event and the DJ saying, when I say week, we, you say work.
You say work. Yeah, oh, no, those.
It made me sick, you know? It's like, it's just like, ugh.
I gotta say this. Every time they showed a shot of the raging summer camp stuff, all I could think of was, this is stuff white people like. I mean, that is a lot of white people. That, I don't know how you run a company in New York City, which is an insanely diverse place, and put together a group of people that is that white.
Well, I don't know about that. I didn't notice that, but I enjoyed.
You didn't notice that?
I did not know. I don't look at color, JVL.
You don't see color.
I don't see color. See, I'm much more woke than you are. But it was funny. The black lawyer who was talking to the guy at the event.
That guy was great.
Who was talking to another black guy who was asking him, and he says, "Well,
who's an usher? Just an usher walking the event."
Well, let me ask you something, brother. He says, "Is this a cult?" You know, and yeah, he got it.
So I don't know. I mean, do you guys, where are you on the cult versus business aspect? Which do you think would have been more interesting?
Well, the ending, it was interesting, JVL, when they're talking about when, you know, they're looking through the numbers, right? The books, they have to open up the books, digitally speaking, and Abita and such. And he was using the term, they had a term called community Abita. Mm-hmm. Right, EBITDA, and so it's the earnings before, et cetera, interest, et cetera, and depreciation, whatever. So, but they're looking at that, and they just slashed all the stuff that would have made them would have exposed their debt, saying, "Oh no, well this doesn't count, and this doesn't."
And they
count.
Turned it into profit.
Yeah, and that's how they did it. And they're just sort of just making things up, yes. And it also ties into the earlier thing about the lattes versus cappuccinos.
Yeah, and another
like
big
whatever.
Another big piece of the story was the way the shares were constructed. So there were different classes of shares, and only certain classes had voting rights, and Adam Neumann held all of those. I mean, this was either somebody inside WeWork missed all of this in an incredible dereliction of legal and fiduciary duty,
or
they were in on it. Because no corporation could be, and this is why people went crazy when they, you know, when the S-1 was finally filed for the IPO, and once people looked and saw how the corporate structure of it was, they were like, "Are you fucking kidding me? This is nuts." And you know, the part I really didn't like about the documentary was the last 15 minutes or so, where I felt like it was okay, it was perfectly serviceable. But it did not stick the landing in explaining like exactly what happened. Because what happened is, it turns out that not only is WeWork not worth $47 billion, but that Neumann has contrived to present something which many people viewed as nearly being fraudulent. I'm saying this carefully because Adam Neumann has retained a lawyer, a legal firm, which goes around and searches out basically every mention of this documentary and sends lawyer letters to anybody who says anything nasty about him.
Wow.
And at the bottom of the lawyer's letter, it says, "This is confidential and off the record, so you can't tell anybody that we sent this to you."
God, I hope they send us one. I hope they send us one, because I will read it they've, on the air.
They've yeah. sent it. They've sent. I have one of them, as it turns out. So this guy was doing this stuff, and when it comes out and everybody goes running away from him, and it turns out that the company can't be viable because it needs more money. It needs credit to stop its debt because it's burning like $100 million a week or something insane like that. And so it's bleeding out. It's bleeding to death, and nobody will advance them any credit because he's there. And what happens is this. In order to get credit, he has to be forced out. He says to Massa and the SoftBank guys, well, as it is right now, the company is still worth $12 billion. If you wait another couple of weeks, it'll be worth $9 billion. And after that, who knows what's going to. It's going to zero, probably. That's with me here. If you make me go away...
Right. Save the company.
Then... maybe you'll be able to salvage $4 billion worth. So if you give me $1.2 billion, I will leave, and then maybe you can salvage something or not. And that's what SoftBank does. And so at the moment when everything is terrible and what the company needs is a turnaround, because he's there and he holds all the voting shares, he essentially is holding the company hostage, and he forces SoftBank to buy him out, again, to the tune of close to $1.2 billion, at the end of which he goes away and all of his employees get laid off and sent packing with nothing.
Yeah. Here's a question I had while I was watching it, and it was something that I thought I had read, but maybe I hadn't. And again, this is why I'm glad you're on the show, JBL, because I know you will know this. There was a chance that SoftBank was going to fail as a company, right? Like the biggest bank in Japan was like on the verge of just collapsing entirely because of this, right?
It almost broke SoftBank.
Which and SoftBank is like the size of Wells Fargo, essentially equivalent in Japan.
Uber and everything.
Way bigger. Yeah. Way bigger. And SoftBank is even bigger than that. And it's so the Vision Fund, which is the $100 billion hedge fund, which is financed almost entirely by the Saudis. So this is the type of question which I wish the filmmakers had explored. One of the things Massa says to Adam Newman when he goes to him is he literally tells him, you got to be crazier. I know you're out there talking about all this crazy shit, but you got to amp that up like 10x. That's how you get people to give you the real money. And so Adam Newman is like, oh, okay, I'll just turn it to 11. Does this get to 11? Right. And he gets even crazier. And that's when the Vision Fund just starts shooting the money into him. What if we are at a place in capitalism where that is actually the right strategy? Oh. And what I mean is this. So what you have is one of the reason people in finance like tech is because you have very low marginal costs, very high ability to scale, and many of the sectors are winner take all. And so the idea for these VC funds is you go out and you spread around a bunch of bets and you bet on 150 different companies, and it is totally fine if 149 of them literally go out of business in a week. Because if one of them becomes Facebook, then that pays for everything else. And that is essentially Massa's approach, right?
You know, and when SoftBank is doing better than ever again.
Give money to everybody, and so long as one of them hits, then it's all this other stuff and all the chaos that it creates, right? When something like this happens. I mean, it's really bad for New York real estate, bad for the people who work. It's just bad, right? Tons and tons of economic destruction. I don't know. Is that good? Is that bad? These are interesting questions that and they had the guy from the NYU Business School,
Stern,
that professor who was really good.
I thought he was very good.
I could have had 15 more minutes of him. Forbes reporters were very smart and very good. The guy with the hat, I don't know who he was, who talked about the Nantucket sleigh ride. Yeah. and how, because that's what Newman realized. Yeah, Newman realized
this is it.
He had caught the Vision Fund and Massa, so yeah. that they needed him more than he needed them.
Right.
Right. You know, they were the whale.
Yeah.
And so long as he lost enough money, right? Mm-hmm. This is, again, all of this is a 25x version of if you owe the bank $1 million, the bank owns you. And if you owe the bank $150 million, then you own the bank. Mm-hmm. That's what all of this is, but just at a larger scale. And I don't know. These are interesting questions. And instead, the documentary was more concerned with he was so charismatic. Mm-hmm. We thought we were going to change the world. And I don't know. Like, I feel like we've heard those.
Well, it worked for me. I understood.
No, I didn't like it. I'm not saying I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I felt it could have used the most interesting stuff.
Right.
On the floor. Right. That's all. Right. I am interested in asking you guys this. We now have this little mini genre of hate watching documentaries, like the Theranos documentary, the Fire Festival documentary, this thing. What sort of emotional impact does it have? Do you enjoy
loathing,
watching people that you want to murder? Do you not enjoy it? Do you find it cathartic when they meet their comeuppance?
Kind of, although he didn't meet his comeuppance, did he?
No.
Because he still has more money than we do.
$1 billion.
Yeah.
Billion.
So there's a little bit of an outrage feeling there at the end. You shake your head. I mean, you
Elizabeth Holmes is going to be fine. Elizabeth Holmes is not going to be standing on the corner asking for food.
Yeah.
You know? What are your...
Boxer should take a gamble on us. Give
things.
Us $1 million. I mean, you know, what is $1 million to the Vision?
No, but that's... You got to ask for $1 billion, right? Yeah. Nobody will give you $1 million. But maybe if you ask for $1 billion...
They'll be like, ooh, that's interesting.
But what do you guys think about this idea of the hate-watching documentaries... About the,
is it healthy?
The capitalist fraud of our... Well, I forget healthy. Like, is it enjoyable? Like, as a genre, is this sort of thing that you think,
I don't know about enjoyable. I find it interesting. I find it informative. You learn something, you know?
I mean, we these are the documents of our ridiculous, decadent age, right? Like, these are the things that demonstrate that the system is broken. But nobody has any idea how to fix it. I mean, that was my big takeaway from the Theranos doc, was all of these people, all of these smart people coming in and putting their reputations on the line for this ridiculous
fraud.
Thing, this ridiculous box of needles and vials of blood.
With broken glass.
That were swirling around and, you know... The fact that you had like the most respected people essentially in the country, guys like Jim Mattis, right, mm-hmm. vouching for this thing, and it being totally fraudulent is like the giveaway that we are living in some sort of end times. Who knows what that is going to look like? And I think that these are all of a piece where you have ridiculous people, ridiculous amounts of money, and ridiculous technological trends all converging at the same place. Because the Fire Festival thing, like, it's fun watching the rich dopes, you know, get hoodwinked and lose their money.
Sandwiches.
But the thing that's actually interesting about it is the way that social media was used to create this idea of the Fire Fest, this idea of a thing that is that you need to go to be important and popular, and like that's where all the cool stuff is happening. And with this, it's the same thing, right? Where you have these, and this is why I disagree with you slightly on the cult versus business stuff. Like, leave aside the fact that the business side of thing is harder to make cinematic than the cult side of thing. Like, leave that aside. The issue here isn't so much the fraud. The fraud happens all the time in every age and in every
That's right.
country, everywhere. What is interesting is this idea that I think people look, I think the people involved in this thing, aside from Adam Newman, who knows what he thought, but the people he brought on board actually believed that they were changing the world. Right. They believed in this idea of we are making new.
Right.
We are rediscovering how to work.
Yeah.
We are changing the face of work and what it looks like. And they were given purpose. They were given a reason to come to work. They were given something that is changing the world. And that is what was taken advantage of here more than anything else, more than a desire for wealth or any of that. I mean, that's all handled in the Moss and SoftBank stuff. This whole genre, this whole mini genre, if you will, is basically just looking at how people are using technology to take advantage of the desire to find meaning in mm-hmm. in your life.
Yeah, these people are lost.
Right? That's what it is. That is the right. running theme through all of this is like, we are going to give you something that gives you meaning mm-hmm. in your life. Mm-hmm.
Because
and
you feel like you don't have
any. That's what people are looking for. They're yeah. all trying to fill that hole in their chest with, mm-hmm. you know, either WeWork or blood machines or, you know, bologna sandwiches.
All right, let me ask you guys a question. You're walking through a jungle accompanied by Elizabeth Holmes, Adam Newman, Rebecca Newman, and Billy McFarland. You come upon a hole in the ground, at the bottom of which are those heart, you know, the tiger spikes and also water moccasins uh-huh. and piranhas and sharks with lasers on their frickin' heads. And you can push one of these four people into, but you can only push one in because there's not room for the others. You can only push one of them into this pit of death. Who is it?
I don't know. I don't know. They're all equally bad.
Probably Billy McFarland.
Is there one that stands out, JVL?
That guy is spectacularly.
I think it has to be Adam Newman because he's the one who walked away with all the money.
Can we extort Adam Newman? Can we say, like, we're going to throw you in this pit unless you give us half that $1.2 billion?
No, you can't. All you can do is throw them in the pit with the piranhas and water moccasins and tiger sticks.
I find Billy McFarland much more annoying, frankly.
But it's
Billy
interesting
McFarland
nobody's
went
really
to actual
choosing Elizabeth
pounding
Holmes.
In the ass
That's
jail,
what's interesting.
Right?
I don't know.
Elizabeth Holmes is pretty bad. Yeah. For me, she's my number two. Yeah. If you tell me that I can't have Adam Newman to throw into the pit of death, mm-hmm. it would be her.
What about Rebecca Newman? Her before Rebecca
oh,
Newman?
Oh, no. The
Wait,
other way
absolutely.
Around. No, other way around.
She was weird. I don't like the looks of her.
Really quickly, I was going to say, it reminded me, this whole cult thing reminded me, before I worked at the Standard, so this is in the summer of 95, and I was looking for jobs. There was a posting for, I forget what even the posting was about, if you're interested in this or that, come to this meeting about, you know, about working in
Scientology.
It wasn't Scientology, but it was like international, you know, something of international business, whatever it was, and you had to drive out. So I think it was like I had to go out to like Reston Town Center, right? So I said, okay, let's see what this is about. So I get there early. Not sure. I'm just looking to see what this is about. And they were like some guy, young guys dressed up, like, you know, wearing suits, but they didn't have their jackets on, but you know, obviously they were like khakis and shirt and tie and the whole thing. And they were young, like my age at the time, maybe a little bit older. Probably because then if I was straight out of college, so maybe they were in mid-20s, they were going to McDonald's. I saw them coming back from McDonald's, and they were going back to the office. And the name of the office was Equinox. And I don't know if you know about
it. The gym?
No. So I said, oh, I don't know what this is, but, you know, stay for the presentation, right? So you sit there. I get inside, and the guys who I saw, because I remember one guy was was this Asian guy. That's what I remember. But anyway, he was watching. They had, like, CNBC on TV. You know, and so you have the stock tickers and stuff like that is going on. They're keeping track of, you know, what's happening on Wall Street. And then you sit down, everyone, all these young people like myself, sit there in this room, and a guy comes up there. I remember the guy because he was wearing a khaki suit, which is very unusual. Who wears a khaki suit? This was the 90s. But mm-hmm. anyway, he starts talking about the idea of Equinox and, you know, making money for yourself and having this kind of money and being involved in business and everything and in people, blah, blah, blah. And at the end of the day, what was it they were selling? Water filters and also vitamins. Oh. Anyway, but they said if you sold X amount, then you'd get a piece of it yourself. But if you get the key is not just to sell it, but to get your friends to sell it.
Well, you gotta get people under you.
It was like that. And at which point I realized I gotta get out of here. This thing's crazy, you know. I mean, and everyone's nodding along, you know. And I'm like, I don't. And I wondered how many of those people stayed. Anyway, fast forward. Then luckily, John Podhoretz rescued me. And then I worked at the Standard. But then Equinox popped up in the news later because the whole thing went down. You know what I mean? And
so do you remember Doug Liman's directorial debut as a small movie called Go, which I always think of
Swingers.
As
like, yeah.
Oh, was Swingers his first one?
He directed Swingers.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So Go is kind of like teen.
It was very 90s.
Teen.
I know where you're getting. I know where you're getting at.
Whatever. You don't like Pulp Fiction. Teen Pulp Fiction. Yeah. Anyway, and there's a great scene where Scott Wolf, I think, and Jay, who's that comedian?
Jay Moore
wind up at, they're a gay couple, and they wind up at Bill Fickner's house.
Yes.
And Bill Fickner brings him into his bedroom, and you think
convinced.
Weird swinging sex stuff is going on, because he's asking him also, do you like this? Do you like the sheets here? Do you like this bed? You know, all this stuff.
This is the cologne. Smell the cologne right here.
Right. So Scott Wolf thinks that he is being propositioned for a swinger thing here. And then he turns out it's all Amway.
Right. Consolidated. It was called Consolidated Products. And then they said, in fact, it was Jay Moore who says, you're selling Amway? And then he stops. He goes, No. It's not Amway. It's called Consolidated. It was like another, it was like
so
a rival too. It was a rival too. And and we're running over the time here, but I actually sat through one of those because of a friend who was into that at the time. And,
Josephine?
No. So I had to listen to this. I thought I escaped him because I skipped the group meeting that we had, that we all got roped in. Nobody realized what they were getting into at the time. And then...
Instead, you went and bought some Tanzanite.
I already know. And it's funny because a friend of my friend Jose was there, and he decided if he's going to sit through this, he's going to get his, Big Chill 7-Eleven and fill it up with bourbon and Coke. Anyway, so I ended up getting a one-on-one with this guy, Randy, and he's talking to me. And it was all about, like, if you had more time, what would you do? Right? If you had more time, what would you do? What would you like? What would you like to do? If you could buy any car,
two
what
chicks
kind of
at
car?
The same time.
Just jack it all the time.
Right. Besides, I'm doing it now. And, right. Or if you could buy any watch, I'm like, well, I'm wearing a Rolex. No. But anyways. But it turns out it's Amway. But the weird thing about Amway is that they were just ahead of its time. It's about never having to leave your house and ordering stuff in a catalog, which is basically Amazon. It's so sort of, they got robbed. Yeah, they got robbed.
It's almost exactly the same.
That's almost exactly. Okay.
It's like SkyMall.
It's like
SkyMall.
I've never bought. I always wanted to. Okay. Spirit of the week. Are you drinking anything, Sonny?
Just Diet Coke.
Okay, I'm just drinking water today.
I'm drinking.
What do you got there? Birthday drink, of course.
I'm drinking a glass of the Coppola Vineyards, their Claret.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Which is a Merlot and Cab blend, and I love it. And Costco sells it like $5 cheaper than anybody else.
Yeah.
So it's like $10 a bottle.
That's good every day. That's very nice.
12, 14. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cheap.
Yeah. Okay, good. Any corrections?
I'm sorry, Vic, you're doing good every day. This is my special occasion wine. So Vic is like, that's fine.
That's your Opus One.
That's what you give to the homeless guy when you're coming.
I wouldn't even go that far, Sonny.
When you go to the store and you buy like seven bottles because you know you got to give one to the bum to get by. The Claret.
Give him the Claret.
The Coppola Claret.
Yeah, the Coppola Claret is my special occasion.
The maker of Godfather 3.
That's okay. You can turn it up. You can turn your nose up to it.
I love all the Coppola wines. I drink all of them, not exclusively or anything, but like they are all very good.
Okay. That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at Sonny Bunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We are there. Tell your friends. Until next time. What do you got?
Victor, what do you got? You didn't even tell us like what you've been up to this week. How are you?
No,
right?
I told you hot feet. Other than that, no, I've just been...
Hot feet.
But no, not anymore.
Foot cancer.
Not anymore. Yeah, that's right. Neuropathy.
Doesn't the Wolverine blood take care of the foot cancer?
I think it's really that it's one weakness is it has nothing. It doesn't counteract diet.
Can't do anything against food.
Other than that.
Have you been eating anything particularly bad recently?
What were your lunches like this week? No, I've been... I have been good so far. And yeah, I did. I made a nice a fried cod today. And I basted it in butter. But if you cook it at home, it's okay. You know, my big thing is, my fixation is, of course, is finishing everybody's food. I hate waste. Because waste is a sin. So, I mean, but then next thing you know, I'm eating.
Is there any food left over? You've got a teenage boy
in
your house.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Like, he's
picky. He eat everything
he'll eat everything else, you know, but like if there's, you know, leftover from a dinner or something like that.
But not like oysters.
When did I have that? I think I had that last Friday. Okay. But other than that,
I'm sure it's fine.
I'm sure it's fine.